We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Well, at long last, we're here. Damn, it took a minute, right? In case you don't remember, I'm John Ellis. We have a special guest as well. It's the Roar Podcast. Powered by Blue Wire. Yes, we're back. No, we weren't fired. No, we didn't quit. No, we don't hate you. No, we do care about you. Yes, we have lives. But now, we're back. And we are going to be spending a little more time with you here as we lead into the NFL draft and even into those doldrum months between OTAs and mini camps. And the Joey Chestnut hot dog eating contest season where there's nothing going on. But we have decided to keep going. And you know what? We're very grateful for you because you, as our listeners, as our family, really, have been here since 2020. This is season 5 of this podcast. We thank Kevin Jones and the entire team at Blue Wire for making that possible. But we're hoping this is the year we finally get an opportunity to turn the page and see positive trajectory. I can't wait to dive into it with Billy later on. He's going to hop on with me, and we're going to talk draft, free agency. We had a show a few weeks ago where we covered some of that. As we come to you on a Friday, if you're hearing it on said Friday, it's a week away exactly to the day where the Panthers have their two early second-round picks to play with, and we'll see if Dan Morgan, Dave Canales and company, let's see what they do. Wide receiver? I've got thoughts on that. I've got thoughts on some things I really don't think a lot of people think of in terms of a need, something Dan Morgan even addressed this week, and we'll dive into that later in the show. Mailbag time. Oh, we got some questions. The mailman has been stuffing them in the box, and I have not been out to the mailbox in 3 months, so we're emptying out the Roar mailbag, and certainly appreciate you guys, as always, on Twitter, X, whatever the fuck we're calling it these days. So nice to do a podcast. I've done so much radio. I can say fucking shit, which is what this has been for a few years now. Just us going on and trying to be our best selves here on this podcast, giving you analysis, film, guests, but sometimes just fucking shit. Just time to stop with this shit. And in the spirit of that, we will be joined by Mina Kimes from ESPN here momentarily, who will help us at least try within the busy confines of a schedule that is unbelievably off the chain, help us fix the Carolina Panthers. It's a tall order, but if anybody can do it, I'm sure Mina Kimes can. She'll be by in just a minute. But just, fuck, man. 2020, this is when this podcast started. We know the story, and we're going to do some history lessons here with Mina, and I'm sure she's going to not want to do all that, but welcome to our podcast. It's how we roll. If you just such a blur, like if you're a Panthers fan, then you can remember your life as said Panthers fan in either one of those two decades, actually three if you count the 90s, where there were some moments of glory, not glory hole, according to Jerry. No, real glorious moments by the Panthers. Speaking of Jerry Jones, the Panthers, in those glorious moments, knocked off the Cowboys twice in the playoffs. Those were great moments. this franchise has not sniffed anything remotely close to that type of intensity, that type of atmosphere, that type of sense of community and camaraderie and hope. And this is what you do it for. And I think we become numb to this after a while. The amount of just continued bad football, it can demoralize and it can steer fans away. The thing about the NFL, I'll say, is most people I talk to and my own sensibilities feel this as well, that I'm not going to go anywhere. I still very much have an interest in this team. My entire family cheers for them. Bless their hearts. It's been a hard 24, 36 months. The only silver lining we had was that Steve Wilks came in and cleaned the dog shit that Rule had smeared all over the wall up in a matter of minutes and said, all right, enough of this. Let's fix our team. Some of you have asked me, what do I think about Dave Canales? I'm not going to talk about his personal life. I won't, and that's not for any of the reason that I wouldn't want somebody doing that to me. So let's just go ahead and get that out of the way now. It's not important to me. That's been chronicled, and that's his life. It's in the past. I've interviewed him once. That was about 4 weeks ago. And the thing he said to me, and he's probably repeated this statement, as coaches tend to do, we got to get the football right. And I've thought about that interview I had with him, about 10, 12 minutes of just talking football and Derek Brown and his family life in terms of, you know, what's it like to have your kids know you're a head coach in the NFL, but mixed into that, you know, bundle of personal stuff and football stuff and how he came of age as a coordinator was the phrase, and again, we're paraphrasing here, we want to get the football right. The issue is the ball. Those are cliches, yes, but it is the damn truth. It is a simple, succinct message. Fix the football. Fix it. I don't know what I saw last year. I don't know what I was walking into. I don't know why my expectations were galaxies away from what happened in reality. I don't think it's completely fair that we all beat ourselves up about it, because I think most of the world was saying, hey, Panthers, attaboy. Not bad. Frank Reich has won playoff games. Look at this staff. Bryce Young, great distributor. But it's the NFL, and things are complicated. You need systems to marry with the actual personnel. That personnel needs other personnel with them to conduct business at a high level. And I think back to what the great poet John Fox once said, a man of a few words, but boy, it's football poetry. Winning is the ultimate deodorant. He probably stole that from Chuck Knoll, and Chuck probably stole that from some college old head. But it is. You start winning, and David Tepper will be dancing with you in your tailgate parties again. It will happen. You know it. The deepest, darkest of the haters out there, and rightfully so for what he's been doing lately. You know, if you win, everything feels good. There are no bridges burned here. Now, do I think they have the guy to turn it all around? I don't know. You know, Jim Harbaugh does a pretty good job walking into anywhere he goes. He might piss a few people off, but things get turned around in short order. I don't know much about Dave Canales and his systems. I've had to do a lot of research. I've had to speak with him, although mantras around there from guys I talk to is say less. It's been quiet. And I dig that as a football guy, as somebody in the media, obviously, if I'm covering this team on the beat, which I do for iHeartRadio, tough flow of information, that's one thing. I haven't gotten the sense that's the way it is, but I think the players understand when you're 2-15, you don't have a lot of time to sit around and pontificate. Let's just get right down to the meat of it, fix the football. So far, the acquisitions that have been made, Billy and I will go over that here shortly and talk about the free agency moves and the upcoming draft, which is less than a week away. Panthers drafting, at least at the moment, they hold on to that 33rd and 39th pick with some interesting choices to be made in those picks if they keep them. I don't think they'll trade into the first round. I would not do that. I do think there's a chance that one of those two picks could go backwards to maybe recoup, depending on which trade draft value chart you follow. They could pick up another one of those. Blue Wire is the proud presenter of this show. We thank Kevin Jones and the entire Blue Wire team for having us back, and they're just doing a great job out there in Vegas at the Wynn. I saw so many of the shows out there now. We started with Blue Wire back in 2020, and I believe we were one of the flagship shows. in terms of the content push from Kevin. The guys is we really want local, regional content out there in terms of teams being represented. And look, Billy and I are grateful for not only Kevin and his team supporting us all these years, giving us a platform where we can come on here, be a little nerdy with the film, chuckle from time to time, an opportunity to just kind of, you know, get through this together. And I think it's important that we continue to do that because, you know, look, once upon a time, I was sitting there punching the walls like everybody else when the Panthers would lose. It would ruin my week. And I got out of that racket because it was not good for my life. And I had a background in broadcasting and journalism. So I said, what the hell? Let's cook something up here. Let's take something that I love but makes me nuts, and I can still love it when it's good, and when it's bad, I can let my kids suffer the consequences of the heartache of being a true fan. I have literally had to detach from it, and when they win, certainly in the press box, you behave yourself, but no, I crack a smile when they win. It happened exactly twice last year, and it was at the very end of the game, because the Panthers, just so we remember this stat, they led for 0 minutes and 0 seconds last year in the fourth quarter. Two walk-off field goals, one of which was against Houston, by the way. CJ Stroud, not so hot after all. Such a stupid narrative. It's so stupid. The narratives this time of year. I can't wait to get Billy on here. Oh, God, the McCarthy, the Ascension. Does it not reek of a Mac Jones type of run on somebody's bullshitting somebody here? McCarthy is a very good quarterback. He was so insulated within that run game and the defense. And look, I know traits are what you look at in projection, but you know, Penix is just sitting there with a couple of surgeries and he's being downgraded for medicals. But to me, Penix gives you a higher ceiling and more opportunities to be great. I think he could elevate teams, and that's what you look for in a quarterback, I think. Not that that's our business this year, because the Panthers have a guy they believe is their quarterback. And I would, again, we'll get into this with Mina Kimes here from ESPN in a moment. Bryce Young, it's coming up on, like, what, start 17 for him? And executives have talked about this. It's not a golden rule, but it's a general rule of thumb. You get through 20 starts in this league. No matter the circumstances, you need to start seeing some type of ascension to where you want to be, especially as the number one overall pick. There are a lot of things you can buy with the number one overall pick. Carolina certainly spent a lot of money to get the number one overall pick in terms of draft capital. I'm over the DJ Moore thing. Honestly, DJ is a very talented player. He was great here. It's time to stop sulking over that. Brian Burns, we'll get into that later. They did what they had to do. I love Brian. I always love that guy. He's been so kind to me, but business is business, and there ain't no way he was getting $30 million here. Not a year. And the Giants did him right. And the Panthers, I think, could be okay here with what they put together. But you get to that 20th start of your career, which Bryce will be into in the month of September. This is critical this season. It's crucial. And I'm very comfortable with what they've done with their head coaching hire and the offensive staff. I'm comfortable with it. It feels right. It doesn't mean it's going to be right. Last year, it felt exciting. Last year, it felt like a novelty. I was pumped up. Oh, these coaches. Holy crap. Shit, there's Caldwell. Holy shit, there's Dom Capers. Damn, that's Hall, the corner from Atlanta's a fucking coach here? Oh, hell yeah. Oh, they're going to fix this. Deuce Staley, we're patching that shit up. I mean, that was me last year, basically. Oh, McCown? Yeah, fuck yeah. No offense to Josh. I like Josh. Josh is going to be fine. He's with the Vikings now, back with Sam Darnold. Twins. Thomas Brown. Thomas was not given a real fair opportunity to transition to an offensive coordinator, but this is a tough business, and when he got his chance, clearly this was not something everybody was in alignment on at all. And then you had the reporting that suggested there were some people on staff that were just snakes, and that's unfortunate too. So what you think you have 1 minute in this league, and what works 1 minute can completely turn on a dime, and I will continue to bang this drum. I hope Dave Canales becomes what we all believe he can be, a guy that took Baker Mayfield from the ashes and made him a Pro Bowl, took him to the playoffs. But you better start getting on this thing now, because the only good thing that's happened honestly, since we've started this podcast, was that pocket of time around December, November, where Steve Wilkes, of all people, the one who continues to lose jobs and continues to recycle around this league, and I do wonder why that is, wink, wink. It's frustrating. Steve was the best thing to happen to this team since David Tepper bought it. And it's a shame we never got to see at least one season of that play out. It's a shame. But it happened. And we move forward with Dave Canales and his staff, and Jairo Evero is still on board, which I think is a great retention. The defense played well last year. Now it's time to generate sacks and turnovers, both of which were in short supply for this team last year. Okay, now it's time to enjoy some real conversation as it relates to the game of football, because we have a special guest here. Mina Kimes, ESPN, has agreed to join us here on the Roar Podcast, and we're hoping she is here, among other reasons, to help fix the Carolina Panthers. Mina, welcome to the show. Thank you for being here.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Where do we start? Obviously, I think Bryce Young's a good place to start. They drafted him last year first overall. As you saw Bryce's season kind of play out, did he survive in advance, or is there some damage there? How did you view his rookie year?
Yeah, I think you got to kind of, I would say, write it off as a lost season, but I think the experience he probably gained from the level of adversity he faced is meaningful. I don't think it, you don't look at that as like the kind of season that, you know, breaks a player. Like, I don't know, you think about David Carr's first few years, but I'll be curious to see how he bounces back from that, whether he can continue developing as a quarterback, or whether, you know, some of the issues that he faced because of his circumstances lead to bad habits. That's going to fall upon Dave Canales and his staff as much as it falls upon Bryce. And, you know, I'm rooting for him to grow from it. And it would not be unprecedented for a player to do so. I was just talking to someone actually about Jared Goff's career arc. And I realized Jared Goff doesn't sound like the sexiest name when we're bringing up quarterback play. But if you look back to the challenges he faced his first year with the Rams, and then what happened when they brought in Sean McVay, I think as a Panthers fan, that's certainly the kind of trajectory you're hoping for.
Mina Kimes is our guest. Of course, you know her well from ESPN. It's been a long time for this fan base. As you know, 2017, the last time this team was in the playoffs, Cam Newton, Matt Rhule, all of it. It's been hard to watch, harder to cover. Dave Canales, you know probably a little bit about his background. Dave worked with Pete Carroll hand in hand. What a season he had last year with Baker Mayfield. What defines success this year for Bryce Young with Dave Canales?
Yeah, the wins and losses don't matter if you're a Panthers fan. And heck, you know, now that you have a draft pick, maybe you're trying to... you want to win games, obviously, but that's pretty low on the list of priorities. It really comes down to Bryce Young, seeing if you can get him back on track, seeing if you've identified a few core players on both sides of the ball that you want around him in the future. But I think with Canales, why I like the hire in a lot of ways, and I think where it connects to your question about what you want to see from Bryce Young, obviously his experience is in working with quarterbacks, and I was really particularly impressed by the work he did with Baker Mayfield this season. You know, you can point to Geno Smith. That's a little bit of a harder case because Geno was like out of football, but I mean, he was in football, but he wasn't really in football. So it's a little hard to know how much to attribute his success to Canales's, or certainly Russell Wilson, although both of those players speak incredibly highly of him. But with Mayfield, it was pretty visible to me. You know, you had him, I thought, playing within the pocket better, making his decision-making look like it was sped up. It looked like he trusted the structure of the offense. I thought the offense was tailored to his skill set and the skill set of the skill players, the wide receivers that they had in Tampa, who are obviously very talented. So I think you want all of those things for Bryce Young and Carolina Panthers, and you have proof of concept as recently as last year.
Be nice to separate once in a while. I mean, that would be a good thing. It was rough going. I think I took it for granted at camp. You saw a preseason happen. I wasn't the only one to say it, but my goodness, Adam Thielen, nice job in the slot. Other than that, I mean, Amir Smith-Marset, that's about the only guy that could separate Mina. That's the
Thielen
only
was better
guy
than I thought he would be. I'll say that. But yeah, it was, I think, I mean, it must have been like, there was a play, I think I maybe tweeted about this, I don't know. There was like a play in week one or two where Young gets the ball out so quickly. I don't even remember if it was Chenault or which of the receivers it was. It was just a comeback. He was expecting them to come out of their break, and they just didn't. And it looked like an inaccurate pass, but it wasn't. And I watched that, and I thought, oh, no. And then as the year went by, you actually saw, I thought, Young make fewer anticipatory throws because of it. And to our discussion earlier about like what you hopefully doesn't translate into next year, I do think the lack of separation on the part of the receivers really did affect him as the year went on, because he was no longer trusting them to get open. It was a real problem. And I think that's one thing with the Panthers last year. And this isn't to totally exonerate Bryce, because I do think he struggled at times on his own accord, but you know, it's one of those things where the TV copy, it looks so much like it's him, and people are at home screaming, throw the ball, or what are you doing, or whatever. But then when you see the all 22, nobody's fucking open in that offense. So Dan and I, Orlowski and I, he called it a Panthers game. And I remember I was texting him Saints at halftime, Panthers, and I was like, what are you seeing there from the, and he's just like, dude, no one's open.
No one's open. And so, you know, the hard part about that for Bryce is, you know, the way we evaluate these rookies, I didn't see Stroud having the year he had, but it's all about where you land and what's around you. That's a big part of it. And where Bryce landed, it became increasingly clear to me by Dan week two, calling that game on Monday night with Chris Fowler. I was there up in the booth, and I was talking to, you know, guys like Al Wallace, who used to play for this team, and Al's just middle of the fourth quarter shaking his head in a two-point game, walking off saying it's done, because nobody can separate, and that's demoralizing for the entire team. If you're going to have a hard year, that's one thing. Don't have a hard year and score 14 points a game and have nothing on the boundary that can separate.
And coupled with the offensive line that really regressed from the play we saw at the end of the previous season, that was probably my biggest evaluation of that team going into the year. I thought that the development or the progression of the line would be linear, like they would continue, that Ekwonu and the other players would continue proving. That's not the case. I'll say this about, you know, the Panthers have done so much in the offseason. Probably one of my favorite moves of any team was trading for Deontay Johnson, because I'll tell you what, that dude gets open. ESPN's wide receiver metrics absolutely love his ability to do so. They've loved his separation. And I like that metric a lot. It's called open score, because separation numbers don't account for the routes that a receiver is running and where defenses are playing them. So, you know, if a player catches a zillion screens, obviously it just kind of skews the whole thing. Wide receiver score does account for those. And Deontay Johnson consistently finishes in the top of the NFL in that regard. So I love that acquisition for Carolina.
Yeah, he's completely foreign to what we've seen here since DJ Moore left. Losing DJ Moore was tough. Losing Burns is tough. How important is it for this team as they reset? And you've seen teams go through this before, to identify who their core is. They re-signed Derrick Brown, give him a big deal. I think that's a big deal for this team. You look around that locker room, Shaq Thompson's getting older. J.C. Horn is always hurt, and I love the guy. What's the core? Where are they? They got to develop something at some point. Otherwise, it's scattered pieces together every year, garbage in, garbage out.
Yeah, well, Brown is clearly the best player on the team, defense. So that was kind of a no-brainer. Right. And I thought, you know, not a totally unreasonable deal on top of that. Horn, if he's healthy, would be part of the young core. He's such a good player. Every time he plays, I'm like, he's awesome. Mm-hmm. But he just has to stay healthy. So I think on that side of the ball, those are really, you know, the two you're starting with. A lot of the players in the spine are gone now. So you want to continue drafting and developing there. I think keeping Evero was pretty huge in that regard, and he should help them identify the kind of players that he wants in that side of the ball. I mean, you mentioned Wanham and Clowney. Those are actually, they're good players. So you're bringing in some competent veterans to hopefully shore up those absences. And then offensively, you need Damian Lewis and Robert Hunt, who you just paid $1 zillion to be part of that core. It's not fun to say guards are the core, but the way you're paying them. And then I think the track record of both, those are two good players.
We'll take it.
And the contracts took people by surprise. I get that. But if you separate the contracts out of it, they're both good players. You know, Damian Lewis is, I thought Seattle was going to retain him. I think Carolina priced them out of it, but he's a good player.
Is it pass blocking? Is that what you would say comes to mind when you think of Damian, or a road grader? Because Hunt's 6'6", 300,000 pounds. Yeah. He's a monster. What do you see in Lewis?
I think he's pretty solid when he's healthy. He's you know, kind of a fire hydrant shaped human. I think he's decent in pass pro. He had to play next to some pretty dubious combinations, although, you know, we'll see what happens with Ekwonu on the left side. But you could definitely trust him to hold up against, I wouldn't say like the Aaron Donalds of the world. In fact, Aaron Donald might have, I think he has a montage of him just destroying the will of every single Seahawks offensive lineman, and Lewis is part of that group. But against the non-Aaron Donalds of the world, you could definitely trust him in pass protection. So, you know, I like I said, I thought Seattle would try to retain him. He's definitely one of the better offensive linemen that they've drafted in recent years. And I do think he got better, too, as his career went on.
What about David Tepper? Now, when you look at this from afar, obviously we're in Charlotte. We see it too closely, too emotionally. When you don't win and then Splash Mountain happens in Jacksonville, it's been hard to put trust in this group as someone who covers this league from where you do. What needs to change?
Yeah, I mean, you never know how much of a franchise's struggles to pin on ownership. I think he's an easy person to point to and say, oh, these draft picks, and well, there's been one guy who's been, you know, the failed trade, you know, they didn't trade Burns and they drafted in this and that. And by a lot of accounts, he is overly involved. That's been reported, which is never something you really want associated with an owner either. So, you know, I'm not going to come out and say the bad decisions made by Scott Fitterer are David Tepper's fault. I will say he has really embarrassed himself with some of his actions, including what you alluded to, and I think absolutely deserves to be criticized for that. My hope is that Canales, who I know they signed to a multi-year deal, is somewhat insulated from his, you know, reported meddling or whatever, because he seems like a good dude. And obviously I want both him and Young to succeed, but, you know, I'm not gonna put rose colored glasses on when talking about David Tepper. I'll help you find optimism elsewhere on this roster.
But
yeah, no, I know. Yeah, no, I mean, he honestly seems pretty rough.
To your point, I think it's very fair. And I've mentioned something along these lines too, that there is a mythology about how owners can bring the whole thing down, and you point to the owner and say, oh, it's him. It's him. Well, he owns the team. Of course it's him. It's good. It's bad. John Fox once said down here, he was a quotable guy, winning is the ultimate deodorant. So just, I mean, you start winning. They loved Tepper when he arrived here. He was tailgating with fans. And if you start winning again, I think those moments come back. But when you're mired in losing, when you look back, again, we're playing a lot of hindsight here. Mina Kimes is our guest on The Roar. The Matt Rhule hire, obviously, it's sort of, let's take a shot. To me, that was sort of the chain reaction decision Tepper made, and all that came with it, giving him full control, letting him have control over roster decisions to the point where he's drafting long snappers ahead of Trey Smith. That, to me, was the biggest mistake Tepper has made, and it's still recovering. I like Matt. He's a nice guy, but I just never saw the logic in it. It doesn't work unless your name is Jimmy Johnson, or I don't know, you're Jim Harbaugh and you've done it before. When that hire went down, did you give it a kind of a skeptical eye, or were you kind of stoked for the guy? Because I was the guy here around this parts that was saying, no, don't do that.
Found that it's really hard.
The one time I was right.
A good coach in the NFL. I think it's really, really difficult to project. And so actually kind of like in recent years shied away from having super strong opinions about it. You could talk about if I like a player's scheme, if I hear good things about them. Mm-hmm. I was a big fan of Seattle's hire recently because I knew people who had been around Mike McDonald and I really liked what he did on defense. But it's still projection. I don't know how he's going to be when it comes to, you know, the management side of it, the obviously on the offense side of the ball. Now as head coach, he has different responsibilities. Game management is a huge question. I think with Rhule at the time, it was, you know, the people hadn't really coalesced around the idea that the transition from college to the NFL seems to go poorly for a lot of coaches, even though there had been a lot of precedent.
The GOAT, I think since then, Nick Saban of all people. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, right. So I think in recent, like, I think this cycle and the last couple cycles, you're seeing teams kind of like be a little bit more skeptical about hiring college coaches, with Harbaugh obviously being an exception because of his success in the NFL.
Well, he gave us some good moments, the Jay-Z moment. I mean, we had some fun with Matt, and That's he right. had a nice paycheck from it. And I was never mad at Matt. I don't think fans were. I think it was more about, you know, ownership having some direction here. They tried it with the All-Star staff, and it was not a good idea. Yeah. And I'm hoping this is, as we wrap up with Mina Kimes, you look around the NFL draft landscape right now, if you could just give me your sense on Carolina being 33 and 39 in the second round. I mean, look, we're partying in the streets.
It's a good place to pick this year.
We're having a Friday night draft party this year. Look, this is a deep draft for what they need. You don't want to shop hungry, but we are hungry, and there's a lot of goods on the shelves there for wide receivers, interior offensive line. Do you see a certain direction?
I've been on the record. I think they should trade the pick for T. Higgins. So start there. That to me seems like something that's a win-win for both sides, because by the time you get to 33, assuming A.D. Mitchell is off the board, there are still, you know, because what Carolina really needs now is like a true X receiver, right? You have Deontay Johnson, who can be more your Z. I think you have the other needs too, but I think Higgins is exactly the kind of player you need, to be honest.
Do you think that's still in? I know you're not Schefter here, but
likely it seems. Yeah. So if that's not a possibility, and I don't think the Niners are going to trade the Ayuk, you're looking at a lot of really interesting players, some really different profiles. You have like a group of players that I think are kind of slot/Z, a little bit inside outside, who are, I would put in a similar tier. I'm talking about like Jalen Polk, Ladd McConkey, Roman Wilson. Oh, yeah. I think
Pearsall maybe from Florida.
Pearsall,
that whole group,
All those players would be awesome. Yeah. I love McConkey from Carolina.
That's what Thielen plays exclusively, and he's still under contract. So it's like he's the Y on this team. You got to move some pieces around. I agree about Boundary X. That's Leggett maybe? But
Leggett is the one that people would earmark. I think he's a little bit higher. He's higher risk. He's more boom or bust. You're hoping that you get the DK Metcalf trajectory out of him where he develops his route running. But I guess why I bring this up is like, I don't think just because you need a big bodied X doesn't mean you should take Xavier Leggett over Ladd McConkey just because it's a clearer fit with Adam Thielen. Adam Thielen should not dictate the receiver that you take in this draft, is my belief. And I think if you're a Panthers fan and you walk out of this with the guys that the names that we've just mentioned at 33, you feel good about all of them because every single one of them is a better separator than everybody was on the team last year.
Your favorite Panthers memory of all time? Was it 2015 when Carolina went into Seattle week 5-1? Was it 2005? How about 2005 when we ran out of running backs in the title game? How about that? Hasselbeck destroyed us.
There was like a weird stretch where I feel like the Panthers and the Seahawks played literally every year. Annoying.
Yeah.
My favorite Panthers moment of all time is Cam Newton saying, "You like watching film? Watch this," which is probably the coolest thing I've ever seen an NFL player mic'd up do on a football field.
Oh, the good old days. Mina Kimes, NFL Live, draft coverage, obviously. What's on tap?
Oh, I appreciate it. Panthers fans, I've been doing mock drafts. I've done like 6 of them. They're first round complete mocks. However, after the first one, because I got some feedback from Panthers fans, I threw in a bonus pick for the Panthers. So
Go
back to my youtube.com/@MinaKimes, please subscribe and look up the mock draft. If you watch until the end and you can click this little thing on the bottom, you can see who my guests pick for the Panthers every time because I love you so much.
Bonus picks for us. It took Mina Kimes to come into the Roar podcast for us to finally fix the draft. We hope Dan Morgan does the same, and we'll see how it goes. Mina, best of luck. Thanks for taking time.
Great to meet you. Take care.
All right, there you have it. The Roar is back. We can stop complaining on social and everywhere else you go and complain about it. Look, we hear you. Coming up this weekend, you thought we were done. No, we were going to pack up for 8 months like the circus. No. This weekend, Billy and I tangle. Draft preview session. Let's go. Maybe even a mock draft is on the way. More guests coming up next week as the Panthers will pick 33rd overall a week from now. For Billy Marshall, for our guest Mina Kimes, I'm John Ellis. Thanks for being back with us here on the Roar Podcast. Good to be with you guys again. Have a great night. We'll talk to you next time right here on Blue Wire.